Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to a special edition of the .NET Countdown titled Thursday Countdown Thursday. Much like when Raw was on a Thursday, that one time in 1997, it was Thursday Raw Thursday. Too obscure? Not obscure enough? What do you think, Jake?
Not quite obscure enough. I think we got to go weirder next time.
All right, I'll work on it. I mean, I also could have just said we could have just made this the top five moments from WCW Thunder.
If you could find five out of that mess, I would applaud you.
Glacier, he walked out and did things. I like Glacier. You like Glacier. Everyone loves Glacier, man. Bitches love Glacier. This is the All Access podcast, by the way, from ProWrestling.net. This show, normally a member exclusive, it's called the .NET Countdown. It's myself, Will Pruitt, and Jake Barnett counting down the top five and bottom three moments of the week, and normally talking about anything but wrestling in the meantime. This is just something we do normally just for .NET members. If you're curious about .NET membership, head over to ProWrestling.net, hit the membership link on the right-hand side of the page. All the information you need is right there. And, guys, if you've been listening to this for long enough, just do it. Spend the extra money. It's worth it. I think that's enough of a plug, right?
Yeah, let's roll.
Sweet. All right, we're going to start with our top five moments this week. Number five. Kenny King and Chris Sabin's promo on Impact. The crazy thing about this to me is that they gave X Division wrestlers characters. They made Chris Sabin kind of a plucky babyface that you want to see get revenge on Kenny King. They made Kenny King this arrogant heel you don't like. Yes, it's obvious. Yes, it's booking 101, but it actually happened on Impact, and it wasn't just, let's throw these random guys that do backflips into another three-way.
Yeah, exactly. I think if they put some effort into the X Division, it seems like they have, you know, quite a bit of talent there. I mean, Kenny King and Sabin are two of the obvious choices, and I think they'll put together one heck of a feud. I thought Kenny King especially had some pretty good lines in there, and they they definitely made Sabin look the part of the sympathetic babyface, especially, you know, coming back from his knee injuries and whatnot. So I really liked the segment. I thought it was the most attention, you know, that they had paid the X Division in quite some time. And hopefully it means that we get a singles feud out of these two. I think the three-way matches, you know, for every X Division matches is kind of backfiring in a way. I don't think it introduced the level of excitement they wanted. And I think what was missing was these types of feuds, and hopefully they get back to that.
And it almost feels to me like it's too soon to abandon the three-way concept. Like, TNA just made a big deal, huge video packages, and went through a great deal of effort to explain this new concept. And just to quietly abandon it wouldn't work. I would almost say I would like to see this feud grow to the point, and Slammiversary is so soon that it may be difficult to do this, but I would like to see, and since there's only an X Division match every 2 weeks, I would like to see Sabin and Kenny King grow to the point where Hulk Hogan says, hey, things have gotten intense in the X Division. A three-way can't solve it. I want you two to have a singles match, and the winner is the guy that walks out with the X Division championship. King, you don't get to avoid Sabin anymore. Sabin, you got to get the job done. And maybe just make, I don't know, like, is it weird to have a one-on-one match be a special occasion?
Yeah, that's the thing that kind of throws a wrench into it, where, you know, it would kind of be the special case scenario for the X Division, but I guess it's not, entirely a bad thing if they build to it like you mentioned, but, that still leaves three-way matches between now and then, and you got to find a way to make those interesting, and, maybe they can, keep Sabin and King apart for some of those and kind of make them both appear strong heading into the pay-per-view. I'm not sure which direction you take, but they're going to need to find a way to make that singles match feel special. That's really the goal, I guess.
Do you know how I'd make them interesting? More backflips.
Yeah. Yep, more backflips and top rope leg drops. Let's make it happen.
Yeah, so many top rope leg drops. And you know what? Why not a couple dives to the outside, too? I'm going to break out my copy of WWE 13. And I am going to craft this match expertly. using only backflips and dives. It's going to be brilliant. Just wait, people. Just wait. Maybe I'll start being like Ryan Kasser and putting videos of myself playing video games on the internet.
I think you should, and maybe you can capture one of those amazing WWE video game glitches where you set somebody up on a table and then you jump on them and you go through the table, but they remain floating mysteriously in the air.
Every time! This happens to me every time!
It is a ridiculously poor collision detection system they have in that game, but it makes for some great comedy segments on YouTube.
It's true. It's pretty brilliant. Number four, best moment of the week. This one's a little off the beaten path for us. Dolph Ziggler, live tweeting Raw. I thought it was a really fun use of Ziggler while he was out injured. It just made me giggle quite a bit during Raw, including just some classics like, guys, I can't keep this up for 3 hours, JK, JK. We all know I can, right, babe, at AJ Lee. Interacting with a Lance Storm. That little kid does the John Cena, you can't see me. Wonder if he knows how to do all four moves, too. Just some great stuff and some great snark from Ziggler, who has a really great sense of humor.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun to follow along with him on Monday. He let slip a few that really made you chuckle. There was one about Daniel Bryan moonlighting as the Travelocity gnome, and a couple of them about Ryback that were pretty funny. I mean, it made the show more enjoyable for me. I mean, I'm surprised they didn't make more of an effort to kind of promote it. If he's the world champion, he's injured, you know, follow along with him on Twitter, or maybe it was just completely spontaneous. I guess it's hard to say, but it was a lot of fun to follow along with, and it made Raw a little bit more lighthearted, and you actually wanted to keep glued to the television just to see what he was commenting on next. And I thought it was he stayed pretty topical. He didn't go too off the beaten path, and he poked a lot of fun. So it was just a good time to follow along with, and it's too bad he won't be able to compete at Extreme Rules, but I think he definitely showed that he's got a personality that we don't normally get to see on television a lot. So that was fun.
Yeah. I would love to see a little more of that personality. And I know Dolph gets compared a lot to Shawn Michaels. And I think there's a little bit of that kind of snark and edge that Shawn Michaels had in 1995, before he kind of boiled down to being just, the boyhood dream guy in 1996. And Dolph Ziggler, to me, really portrays that and has that sense of humor. And I don't think Dolph Ziggler is half the jackass that Shawn Michaels was in that era either. So that's a bonus for him.
Yeah, I don't know why, we don't see more promos from him. And maybe it's because they have him kind of painted into a corner with the show-off character, and they don't really know how to approach promos in that context. But I mean, really, if you can, have him convey some of that snark into a promo, I mean, it's going to make, the baby faces who get close to beating him, it just can't quite do it, because he's, the chicken shit heel who always finds a way to win. I think it would be a good counterpart to what he's doing in the ring, but he's just not, I mean, they've only really given him one or two promos since he won the championship, and it's just not enough.
Yeah, he hasn't gotten to say much, which is strange with 6 hours of first-run WWE programming on television, that they can't find 5 minutes in there to let Dolph Ziggler just have some fun on the mic and let him establish his character now that he is world champion. Strange, but Dolph Ziggler, funny guy. I like him. We'll probably talk more about him later. I say probably, like we haven't worked out the list. That's funny. Yeah, we're doing this all spontaneously, guys. This is straight off the top of our heads, and there are very scientific reasons for each thing that gets picked. Number three best moment of the week, the surprise return of Abyss on TNA Impact. Jake, I talked a lot about this on Friday, so tell me what you thought about it.
Well, I it's hard for me to really get into Abyss because I watched, TNA during his best runs, and I feel like I've seen a lot of what they're doing with him I mean, I like the interaction between Abyss and, you know, Joseph Park and the kind of split personality stuff. And so, you know, I'm really kind of holding my tongue a bit just to see where it all ends up going, because I think they can have fun, you know, kind of moving him back and forth between those roles and playing dumb and doing something interesting in that regard. But just seeing Abyss back, you know, and doing what he does best, which is, you know, just kind of throw people around. I mean, I've seen that so many times before that I'm kind of sensitized to it in a way. But I thought the way they executed it on Impact was well done with the backstage segments and you know, the final kind of surprise to close the show. But Abyss is what he is. It's just a matter of how well he's used. And thus far, you know, on Impact, he was used pretty well. He kind of stumbled out of the gate a bit when he got to the ring with some botches. But once he settled down, I thought everything worked out perfectly. But it was it's nice to see him back. I'm interested to see more so how they interact as two characters than necessarily, you know, what Abyss is doing. But I'm not against it at all in any way.
You know, I think Abyss is a great guy, like a great character to have as the – are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Sorry about that. I think Abyss is a great character to have around as the kind of, what's the phrase I'm looking for? As the next great hope, not the final one, but the next one, as the guy that you go, well, maybe this is the guy that can take out the aces and eights. Maybe it's him. That's a great role for Abyss to be in right now. And I feel like it's a great time to have him come back too. They built it up well with the surprises and everything. And it was a surprise. Now, I say all that, I'm really giving this, you know, this is on the list because it told a good story. When Abyss got to the ring, I thought that the work he actually did was bad. The big boots were hitting, like, chest and gut. What did he do? Was it a black hole slam or a choke slam? I think it was a choke slam through a table. It was just a very, very weak-looking choke slam. He looked out of shape, at least. Out of shape to do the Abyss act, not, you know, he was in fine Chris Parks shape, but Abyss not so much, and that was a bummer.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you have to wait and see how it plays out storyline wise. I mean, you can't write it off as, well, one bad night is the summation of the whole thing. I mean, hopefully it was just you know, he had to shake off some of that rust, and now he'll be you know, he'll be improving from here on out. But I you know, I think Chris Parks has earned enough, you know, playing that character, that, you know, we got to give this a shot. I mean, he's shown that he has quite a bit of range and he can be funny and interesting. So we'll see where it goes.
Absolutely. Yeah, we will definitely see where it goes, and we will be there to talk about it the entire time, unless we both find something better to do. Number two, best moment of the week. Dean Ambrose versus Daniel Bryan on SmackDown, continuing the streak of Dean Ambrose just putting in solid performances as a singles wrestler, and he gets another chance at Extreme Rules against Kofi Kingston. Ambrose versus Bryan was a really good WWE-style match, and with a little bit of an indie flair to it, and that's kind of the style that Bryan usually brings. That's the style that we know Ambrose can work. I enjoyed this a lot.
Yeah, I can't think of anything not to like about it. I mean, you know, if this is a sign of where, you know, WWE can go in the future, you know, I'm all for it. I mean, they have a lot of guys who can probably successfully blend some of that independent wrestling style with, you know, the WWE main event style and turn in, you know, some fantastic matches that have both, you know, kind of the technical expertise that you expect from, you know, guys like Daniel Bryan and Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins and you know, Cassius Ohno, Chris Hero, you know, the list goes on and on, you know, Cesaro, all those guys. I mean, they have a lot of talent that's been wrestling for a long time before landing in WWE, and then they definitely show that they have what it takes to blend those two styles on television. This was another great example of that. And if they can, you know, kind of turn, kind of blend that indie technical expertise with the WWE pacing, I think it's going to be some pretty magical stuff when they give them 20, 25 minutes.
Yeah. I was thinking yesterday and kind of thinking about Extreme Rules predictions. And one thing that I came to was the Shield winning both of the title matches that they're in. And then you can move Daniel Bryan into a singles feud with Dean Ambrose over the United States Championship. And I know, you know, people have been talking about Best of Seven, Kofi and Antonio Cesaro lately, maybe doing that. I think a Best of Seven between Dean Ambrose and Daniel Bryan for the U.S. title would be amazing. It would be an absolutely stunning display. And these two guys, they know how to work in a way where, okay, the first match, hey, they don't like each other, but it's not too crazy. And they know how to build and have different matches and kind of build the intensity as they go until the final encounter, like you said, would be a 20, 25-minute just all out. You know, if there was ever a time for them to work a more independent style in WWE, I think it'd be at the end in that way. And it could just be amazing. And I know, you know, it's kind of wrestling nerd markdom saying, oh, put a Moxley and Danielson in a best of seven. But seriously, like, where could you go wrong there?
Yeah, I don't know. I think Bryan has really shown just exactly how, you know, how he's been able to grow, you know, in this recent feud with the Shield. I mean, you watch some of the matches that he's in, whether it's the tag match or a singles match like he had with Ambrose, and literally, I mean, the crowd wakes up whenever the guy's on offense. I mean, he's got a connection with the crowd, so you know, it's he's definitely somebody you could put opposite Ambrose or even keep him in a tag feud with Reigns and Rollins for a period if you wanted to. But I mean, Bryan is showing himself to be capable just about everywhere, whether it's on the mic or in the ring or wherever you want to put him. I mean, he's versatile, and I think that's probably the best thing you can say about him. I mean, you can plug him anywhere on the card and the guy's going to find success.
Yeah, and I'm not even at this moment, I'm actually not even tired of Team Hell No. They went through a little period where I was just exhausted with them. And now I'm really enjoying the intensity that both Bryan and Kane are bringing. I'm really enjoying their ability to mesh together as a team. And it's surprising because I didn't think that we'd get back to the point where I'm like, yeah, I'm chill with Team Hell No. I like them. If they stay together through losing the tag titles, I won't be upset. Hell, I think there's even money in them amicably parting and then doing, kind of forces of nature, bringing them together at some point. So it is Team Hell No getting back together because they need to fight the Shield again or they need to do something else. And there could be some money in that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, they have a lot of, a lot of goodwill built up. You know, whether – I think the comedy act got a little tired, you know, after a while because it was obvious they had run out of ideas. But, you know, now that they've actually put them into a serious feud, they do have chemistry together and they work well together and the crowd enjoys the act. So, I mean, I don't know if you want to necessarily hurry to break them up at this point. I think they, you know, they still have some gas in the tank. But, if the Shield ends up picking up tag titles at Extreme Rules, you know, you could probably get a rematch out of it. And after that, you know, maybe they do amicably separate until they can find another way to get them back together. But they had a hell of a run. There's no way, you know, to get around that.
Yeah, and to think this all came out of that weird time when Kane was worked into the CM Punk and Daniel Bryan feud, and everyone and their mother groaned because, you know, the feud was really compelling. And then you had Kane going in there, and everyone went, really, you had to ruin this with Kane? Man. Kane really improved things for Daniel Bryan over the next year, and it's crazy to think of just how that choice, that moment when they said, okay, let's put Kane in there, has become has gotten us here. Let's talk a little more about Team Hell No. They were in a 6-man elimination tag team match, teaming with John Cena against Roman Reigns, Dean Ambrose, and Seth Rollins, The Shield, Sierra Hotel, etc. Yeah, great, great tag team match on Raw. Took up almost 30 minutes of the show were dedicated to this tag team match. And, man, I could have watched it go on longer. I really could have. I thought that this was a really nice display from all six men. Some good wrestling. I think that, and we should talk about this, the Shield did in fact lose this match by disqualification. Did that bother you the way it happened, or do you think they protected the Shield enough?
I think they did enough. Nobody's going to remember that, to be honest with you. I mean, it was a good enough match that ended in a sort of a non-finish in a way. I don't know. It's probably not their first loss. You know, if you want to call it a, if you're counting losses as clean losses, it was far from that. I guess Rollins did take a pin, but, you know, who cares? I mean, it's not that big of a deal. You know, if you look at, you know, how that match played out, I mean, there were quite a few moments where the Shield looked dominant. I mean, you had Kane look like a monster. You know, when Brian, you know, kind of got a hot tag in the middle of the match and brought, you know, some of his offense, the crowd just exploded for him. I mean, it was just a huge amount of energy he brought into the middle of that match. So, I mean, everybody had their moments there, and the fact that it ended on a DQ after 30 minutes of, you know, what I thought was very good television wrestling, I mean, there's really nothing to complain about there. I mean, I'm sure you could probably find a way to nitpick about the Shield ended up losing by DQ, but who cares? I mean, it was just fun.
Yeah, I feel like you can go, oh, well, John Cena beat the whole Shield on his own by DQ. But you look, and it is by disqualification. Both Roman Reigns and Seth Rollins, right? Both Roman Reigns and Dean Ambrose were technically disqualified, and, yeah, Dean Ambrose was about to tap out, but Dean Ambrose is a heel, and that's what happens. It was a really fun match, and I know they've been doing this match in some way or another on house shows for the last, month, especially since John Cena got hurt over in Europe, and they've perfected it. They had the crowd in the palm of their hands. I don't feel like they did any dangerous stuff. And you mentioned everyone getting a chance to shine, and the guy that shone brightest in this match was Daniel Bryan, because when he went on offense, and you mentioned it earlier with the Ambrose versus Bryan match on SmackDown, but the second he goes on offense, the flurries that he's able to bring, just the speed that he can work and the ability, the crowd lights up. The crowd suddenly comes alive at a level that they weren't at for Kane and they weren't at for John Cena. Daniel Bryan looked great here. And, yeah, the Shield losing by DQ, they may mention, oh, they put their first loss on him, but let's be real, the Shield's probably about to win some gold on Sunday and be made into an even bigger deal, so I don't think they lose anything. I don't think they're hurt here.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I would have a hard time being convinced that they were really long-term hurt by any of this. You know, I thought, you know, the way the whole thing played out where it kind of fit into all the feuds there. I mean, you know, I guess Ambrose and Kofi kind of got left out a bit, but really, I mean, you got Ryback and Cena kind of, they had a moment there, and then, you know, the tag teams heading into Sunday, you know, they got a lot of good interaction there. I mean, I thought it was, you know, the focus of the match on getting Extreme Rules over. I thought they did a pretty good job with it. I mean, it was Monday's show overall, I thought, did a pretty good job of staying focused on Extreme Rules. So, I mean, it was a much better show on Monday, and then this match, I think, was the highlight of the whole show, especially Brian's offense. I mean, if WWE is going to take their cues from the crowd, I mean, it's about time you let Brian loose and turn him into a, you know, just a buzzsaw in the singles division, because he's ready for it.
Do you feel like, I mentioned the U.S. title, do you feel like it would be a serious demotion for Daniel Bryan if he ended up in a U.S. title feud?
No, I think it would be a promotion for the U.S. title. I mean, it needs some credibility, for God's sake. I mean, if you could get Ambrose and Bryan in a serious feud over the U.S. title, that would be great. I mean, that title needs some prestige, and having two guys of that, you know, that kind of quality fighting over it would be a good thing for that belt. I mean, I understand, you know, Kofi is in the position he's in, you know, because of, you know, whatever his backstage troubles or, you know, WWE's lack of confidence in him or whatever. But what it's amounting to right now is a U.S. title division that nobody cares about. So if he can stay involved in that division, you know, even after losing the belt and having, you know, two major competitors go after it, and Ambrose and Bryan, I mean, it'll probably be better off for him, because he'll be going after a title that's worth more. Yeah.
I think that's one of those rising tide things where suddenly everyone that goes after that U.S. title, if Bryan and Ambrose fall in the mix somehow, you've got a year's worth of credibility in that U.S. title. It kind of reminds me of 2009 Chris Jericho and Rey Mysterio feuding over the Intercontinental title and how that raised the prestige of that belt throughout the year. And you had John Morrison and Dolph Ziggler heavily involved in that division, along with Mysterio kind of holding it down as the veteran anchor. I think that Ambrose and Bryan would be great anchors for that portion of the card. You have Cesaro in there too. I mean, I'm getting a little excited over the thought that at one point we could get a Cesaro versus Daniel Bryan feud. That's just sexy right there. It wouldn't be what I'm getting at ultimately is it wouldn't be a huge demotion. It wouldn't be a bad thing for Daniel Bryan to end up there. So, yeah, let's get into the worst of the week, shall we? Let's get a little negative, trash some things, maybe a terrifying hotel room or two like where Randy Orton in 2006. number three, worst moment of the week, Magnus. Tell me if you've heard this one before. Magnus returned to Impact this week, won a match, looked impressive, then got his ass kicked by Aces and Eights in a beating that will probably put him out for a month.
Yeah, I don't really understand what TNA is doing a lot of the time, you know, and maybe it's just me, you know, not quite perceiving the direction of their booking, or maybe there's something extra here with Magnus that I'm not plugged into, maybe injury wise or something, but I just don't understand the start and stop pushes that they seem to be moving along with here with a lot of their, you know, talents that they don't know exactly what to do with. Magnus being one, Samoa Joe being another, James Storm is kind of all over the place. I mean, it's quite bizarre to me, you know, that we continue to see this happen in TNA, especially, you know, when we thought, you know, not that long ago that Magnus could have been, you know, one of the guys to stand up for TNA and be, you know, take on Aces and Eights. So I'm just kind of blown away. I really enjoy Magnus's work, so I was kind of excited to see him, you know, make his way back to television only to get stomped right off again. So, yeah, it was very bizarre and unfortunate.
Yeah, it was bizarre. It was a really strange thing for them to do. I understand that maybe some people backstage aren't fully confident in Magnus. Maybe they're saying, hey, he's still super green. We saw, you know, he's been green for years. He needs to improve all that. But at a certain point, don't you take a chance? Look at the babyface roster in that company. James Storm got injured special refereeing a freaking match. Sting is your other top babyface. Who else do they have? Hulk Hogan is, of course, the top babyface. What else is there? Chavo Guerrero and Hernandez? TNA is in desperate need of pushing a new babyface. You'd think you'd put Magnus on TV, have him win go over some undercard heels, get him in a meaningful rivalry with, I don't know, Ken Anderson or D-Von. You know, put him over in that rivalry and build Magnus up as one of the next big guys to go after the Aces and Eights. I don't understand how it's compelling or good storytelling or any of that to just have Magnus continuously get beat up by the Aces and Eights and put out. It's not going to make him look tougher every time he comes back. Now he just looks like an idiot for not having, like, armed security around him 24/7. Magnus is...
Maybe they should have him come back as, like, RoboCop or something. Just full armor.
Oh, that would be sweet.
And guns. WCW made RoboCop work.
History.
Let's do it.
RoboCop and Sting have history together. I mean, you're calling on that. I would watch the hell out of that. I'd watch it so hard.
Oh, yeah.
Book an event in Detroit and have there be a special return of RoboCop in Detroit. I mean, that crowd would eat it up. He's a hometown hero.
Yeah, they need a statue of RoboCop in Detroit. I'm going to push for it. I think so.
Don't they have one?
I think so, yeah. But maybe
I'm
we
pretty,
could just, like,
yeah.
make Maybe they could put another one in Orlando outside the Impact Zone or something really fun. Go ahead, sorry.
I was going to say, it's not the Impact Zone anymore.
True, it's just a television studio. So
creepy,
even better.
Face-painted fan in sunglasses and Divas t-shirts that I'm pretty sure looked all rapey all the time. I'll miss you, fan.
But yeah, I really think they're dropping the ball with some of their undercard babyfaces in TNA. I don't really understand their philosophy with who they're building up to take on Aces and Ace at this point. It's kind of one of the more troubling things. Yeah, I mean they're not, and it's one of the more troubling things about the show because Aces and Ace, a lot of the time is made to look, you know, like the Keystone Cops, you know, just kind of buffoonery all the time, and yet there's nobody credible there to just kind of push them off the scene. I mean, you'd think if you were trying to build up a faction to take over the company that they'd have people to actually compete against, but it doesn't seem to be the case very often. And they've kind of mishandled this whole thing as much as I thought it was going in the right direction once Bully Ray kind of explained the whole Aces and Nate's philosophy, but they just haven't executed on that front. It's kind of a bummer.
And that's the thing. The execution has just been very poor for this entire story. I said there's a difference between telling a logical story, and I think we can say, okay, TNA is telling a nice logical story with the Aces and Ace. They showed us why it was logical with Bully Ray and all of that. They're telling a nice logical story, but they're not telling a good story. I mean, I could tell you a story of like, hey, today I took my dog out for a walk and we walked on grass. That's a story. No one cares. And that's really where TNA is right now. They're telling stories that people don't care about. Let's get into our number two worst moment of the week, though. Dolph Ziggler's injury, a freak accident. Now, you watched SmackDown. I watched SmackDown. I saw the injury happen. I don't know how much you and Chris talked about it on Saturday morning on your All Access podcast about SmackDown that everyone should be listening to, even if I didn't this week. I don't know how much you talked about it, but to me, I looked at that and I said, Jack Swagger was throwing a kick that most wrestlers don't have to throw. It was an odd position for Ziggler to be in. To me, that was just kind of shit happens situation, not a let's all fire Jack Swagger because he injured Dolph Ziggler on purpose. It definitely didn't seem that way to me.
I mean, it was a very bizarre kind of situation where Del Rio was sitting in on commentary and he ended up throwing a ladder into the ring to kind of incite some chaos, and Ziggler kind of bent over to pick it up, and then, you know, Swagger basically punted him. What it was. And, you know, I don't know if, because of how short that kick ended up being, if he had any time to pull back. I mean, it just seemed like he gave Ziggler a full punt to the head, more or less. And not like the Orton kind where he just kind of grazes the side of their head or something. It was a full-on head punt. And it definitely concussed him. I mean, you could see it immediately the way he kind of rolled out the ringside and just kind of laid there, so. It was not a particularly shining moment, I guess you could say, for Swagger and Ziggler, but, you know, it did not look malicious in any way from what I could tell, but it did lead to a pretty severe concussion if, you know, if reports are accurate in that Ziggler could not remember a few days. So, I mean, it sounds like from the report that Ziggler had also had previous concussions. So I'm glad at least that they gave him the time off that he needed to heal. There's no sense in having him compete and risk, a further brain injury than what was already done. So, despite how the injury worked against their plans at Extreme Rules, I think they did the right thing for Ziggler's health, and he's going to get some time off. So, nothing wrong with that.
The second I heard about this concussion, I just said, hey, if they have a regular match, I can live with it. If Ziggler is cleared to go, I do not want to see him in a ladder match. Like I felt like that was one of the worst things they could possibly do was to put Ziggler in a ladder match so soon after that concussion. And I'm happy to see that he's not even working the pay-per-view. Obviously, this lands on the worst because the ladder match was one of the more intriguing and exciting matches on Extreme Rules. And now it's replaced with an I Quit match between Alberto Del Rio and Jack Swagger that is not as exciting or compelling, but it's the right thing to do. It's sad to see Ziggler hurt, and I really hope he gets a fair amount of time off to heal. He really doesn't. There's no reason to have him wrestle before the June pay-per-view, that payback show they're doing. There's no reason to have Dolph Ziggler in the ring before then, and I hope he gets that much time off to build a feud with whoever the number one contender coming out of Extreme Rules is, and to kind of just rest and, you know, rest up from the head trauma he suffered.
Well, I mean, you know, it definitely presents, you know, with every kind of bad news you get, I mean, you are presented with an opportunity here. And I think, if anything, it should present them with a lot of time for Dolph Ziggler to cut some promos. I mean, you know, if
yeah.
there's one thing that he can do, you know, that he hasn't gotten an opportunity to do, it show us what he's capable of on the microphone to try to carry a feud in that way and create the kind of anticipation that you want for a World Heavyweight Championship match at a pay-per-view. I mean, if nothing else, you know, have him be the mouthpiece for Big E to wrestle, you know, for a couple of weeks or whatever you want to do. But it's
put him on commentary. Hell, what if he pulled a CM Punk and just sat in on commentary for a week?
Yeah, I wouldn't mind that. I mean, obviously,
yeah.
you know, we already talked about his live tweeting, and that was fun, and you know, it allowed him to kind of break out of that that character shell that he has, you know, that most WWE characters stick to on Twitter. And I thought, you know, it worked out for him because I think a lot of people, you know, if you check those tweets, he had a lot of retweets and favorites and stuff like that. So people were following along with him, and I think it'll help. You know, any exposure they can get him that doesn't involve the possibility of further head trauma, they should be pursuing. I mean, whether it's commentary or promos or just pre-tape interviews or whatever you want to do, just get him on television.
Yeah, absolutely. They need him on television because he's that good of a act, and he's that important to them. And I think definitely giving him the time off shows how important Ziggler is to WWE, that they are not willing to risk long-term plans with a short-term injury. And, you know, for Ziggler's sake, I hope it is short-term, and I hope he does fully heal from his concussion. Let's talk about our worst moment of the week, Jake. You know, on this show before, I've made some mistakes. I will admit it. Some weeks, and rarely, but I've done some weeks with Ryan Kester, who now plays video games online professionally or something. And I've called him Jake. I think I've accidentally called you Ryan before. It happens. Sometimes you get mixed up. Sometimes I just get into the rhythm of saying things and forget that I'm even talking. And our listeners who listen a lot are going, we know, Will. We know. But, Jake, what do you think is the rational way to react when I say your name wrong?
I think, you know, if you're a rational person, you probably do nothing and just politely correct someone. But if you're a douchebag, you stick your crotch in somebody's face.
No, Jake, so what you're saying is sticking your crotch in someone's face is not kind of it's not the right way to react in a situation like this?
No, not at all.
Yeah.
And I think we've covered that.
Yeah. We are, of course, referring to Austin Aries getting upset on Impact and sticking his crotch in the face of Chrissy Emmy when the name of his tag team was announced wrong. And I understand Aries going up. Hey, he's a heel. He's supposed to be a jerk and intimidating her. I do. Like, you know, I even get kind of backing her into a corner and basically saying, announce this as the right thing. You made a mistake. And being a bit of a jerk about it. And then walking to the back instantly and going, hey, Chrissy, I think we covered that well. Thank you for playing along with me. It's, you know, I think we got out of that unscathed. Like, you know, and just kind of joking around about it. Well, what's not okay is him jumping up on the second rope while she's backed into the corner and sticking his junk in her face. That is sexual harassment. It's borderline sexual assault. I think you can make the case for that being a form of sexual assault.
Yeah, I mean, I ended up posting the TMZ story from last night that ended up, you know, hitting the web kind of late in the day about, you know, it was, I guess, I don't know if it was TNA, doing a press release or if it was just something somebody found out through the grapevine that Austin Aries had been, you know, had been fined. I mean, it wasn't really disclosed how much he'd been fined. They, You know, they said he reached out to Christy Hemme privately and made an apology. But I mean, really, I can't think of another situation. You know, no matter where you work, you know, if you're in an environment that actually complies with, you know, with any code of conduct or code, you know, decency. I mean, that you would be able to get away with that with just a fine. I mean, you'd probably end up losing your job or being sent to, you know, to training, you know, something along those lines to, you know, to impress upon you the importance of treating other people with respect. I mean, honestly, he could have, you know, done a heel wrestling bit and grabbed the microphone and said he wanted her to redo the entrance and just start it over, and it would have been just fine. I mean, you know, he could have been, like you said, kind of an ass about it and gotten away with it if it wasn't, you know, if it wasn't so blatantly, you know, creepy. And he definitely took it to a different level. And then, you know, I guess if he would have immediately apologized, he might have been able to get away with it. But instead, he decided to make light of it, you know, on Twitter about how ridiculous, you know, the reaction to it was. And I don't think that helped his case at all. I mean, it just made him seem completely insensitive to the idea that somebody might be offended by you sticking your junk in their face. And you know, I mean, people can talk about how, well, people are too sensitive and we live in a culture that's too litigious and stuff like that. But I mean, you know, think about it, you know, think about it from the perspective, if you're, you know, Christy Hemme's boyfriend at home or her dad or something. I mean, if somebody had done that to a family member of yours, you'd probably be ready to beat them up. I mean, you know, in any real situation. So, I mean, it is serious and it deserved to be taken seriously. And I'm surprised TNA's punishment wasn't more severe than it was, but I guess it kind of just speaks to the type of locker room mentality you continue to hear about in pro wrestling situations. And it does, you know, cause problems with them being taken seriously from a, you know, from an entertainment perspective. And that's a shame.
Yeah. Isn't it strange that a major wrestling company ran by a woman, Dixie Carter, has a reputation for not paying their female talent well, including many of them, women on national TV, working house shows, all of that, many of them having to get second jobs just to make a living, to, you know, to scrape by, pay rent, and eat. Because, you know, it's probably not the funnest thing to be the TNA Knockouts champion and work at Sunglass Hut and have, you know, someone come in and recognize that fact. So many of their female talent, how did they get second jobs? Many of their female talent just saying, hey, it's not a good place to work. And then things like this happen, and you go, how is it that a wrestling company ran by a woman seems to have greater problems in this area than WWE, who I know has a woman prominently in power with Stephanie McMahon, but it's not like the Divas are exactly treated extremely well, especially not as far as stories go. But it's just sad to see that. It's sad to see that this is okay in TNA. I don't think that anything would have been said about it by TNA or done about it by TNA had there not been an outcry online. I think Mark Madden over at WrestleZone started a lot of it and really brought it to people's attention. What about what Chavo Guerrero said, saying, you know, people are being oversensitive. This would have had, no one would have cared if this happened in the Attitude Era. I probably would have cared if someone were sexually assaulted in the ring in the Attitude Era. And I know someone's sitting there going, I'm being oversensitive by calling it sexual assault, but I don't know what else you call it when you force your balls into someone's face.
Yeah, I don't know either. I guess where, you know, it kind of seems odd to me with the Attitude Era comments is, I mean, were there moments in the Attitude Era on television at least where somebody was doing something against their will, like that was unscripted, where something sexual took place? I guess I'm struggling to come up with anything off the top of my head. I know there were probably sexually insensitive things said backstage, and, you know, you hear a lot of horror stories about wrestling locker rooms and their treatment of women, but I don't recall anything off the top of my head, you know, regarding somebody being done, you know, something done against someone's will like this, but I could be wrong.
And this, and let's say this exact same thing happened and it was planned. They all sat backstage, Aries and Christy and, you know, Bobby Roode, Dixie Carter, you know, all the writers, everyone went, okay, this is what we want to do this week. Christy, we know you get, you announce things wrong sometimes. So we think it'd be funny to play that up a little bit. And let's let Aries and Rude get some heat off of it. Do you mind if this is how it goes? If Chrissy Hemme says, yeah, sure, that's fine. I'll do it. You know, I think it's completely different if it's planned. The weird thing here is that Austin Aries just seemed to lose control and get angry and do it. And that's not what you want from someone on the level that Austin Aries is at in TNA. That's frightening to see from someone on that level, because what's to say he doesn't get pissed off in the middle of a match and go and hurt someone? What's to say, you know, where's the maturity there of going, hey, I'm on live TV, something bad happened, I'm going to do this, fix it, but not take it too far?
Yeah, I mean, like we said earlier, there were things he could have done to get himself over in a heelish way that would not have been, you know, borderline sexual assault. I mean, there's some gradients in between there that, you know, that could have been heelish, but not completely uncalled for. And, you know, whether it has to do with Aries' maturity, I mean, I'm sure that's part of it. You know, I can't imagine that this was, you know, considered acceptable in TNA's corporate culture. I mean, they obviously are, you know, they're owned by an energy company that probably has, you know, policies against harassment, and a lot of companies have zero tolerance policies against harassment, where, you know, first offense is you're out of here. So, I'll be interested to see how widely it gets picked up in the media. You know, if people, you know, actually catch on to this now that it's hit TMZ, you know, and it gets kind of wider coverage. But so far, it doesn't seem like it. I mean, maybe a fine is good enough for most people and an apology, but I would think, you know, to set an example, you'd probably just want to suspend it.
Yeah, absolutely. I would really, really like to see Aries have to make a public apology. I would love for him to have to do that on Impact either this week or in the middle of the ring next week in a Jay Briscoe style. And basically just say, what I did was unacceptable, because he did it on live TV. Like, someone should, something should come out on the Impact television show that says, this was not okay. And that's pretty much, I think, the end of the discussion on that. You looking forward to Extreme Rules this weekend?
Yeah, you know, I am. I think they've added quite a bit to the undercard to make it interesting. You know, Kofi and Ambrose, the tag team title match, Jericho and Fandango. You know, there seems to be a nice bit of undercard work there that should, you know, pick up the first couple of hours of that show. And, you know, I'm less excited about Cena and Ryback than I hoped I would be. You know, I think the hype for Lesnar and Triple H has been good despite, you know, their previous couple of matches leaving a little bit to be desired in the ring. I'm hoping they can improve upon that and make it something interesting in the cage. But overall, I think it should be a solid show that the people who order it will get their money's worth out of. There actually are quite a few really good matches on that show.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm in that same boat with you. I think there's a lot of good matches on the show, and I think it could be a very fun and exciting show to watch. I'm looking forward to coming home and throwing that up on the TV on a Sunday night after I get off work. Anything else to add this week about wrestling and such? Mostly.
No, I think that about covers it. You know, covering SmackDown tomorrow night, we'll have some audio for that Saturday morning, and then it'll be, you know, Extreme Rules on Sunday. So it'll be another busy weekend in wrestling.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty extreme, those rules. They're going to
be
very extreme.
I want them to have, like, a printed copy of the WWE rule book on display or something at these events, just so we could see.
How great. With the rules for each, I would love WWE to, in the Extreme Rules program, I would actually go online and, like, find someone to buy me one and mail it to me. If every year they publish the rules of each match in the program, like, in a, you know, in a Texas death match, it's this, and in the last man standing match, these are the ways you went, just because it would be pretty awesome and absurd. Oh, what's your prediction? Cena versus Ryback.
I just can't see Ryback picking up the title at this stage. I just don't think he's ready. I mean, that's not to say that WWE won't try it, but with Cena just winning the title at WrestleMania and the feud with Ryback just not picking up steam as I think a lot of people had hoped it would, I can't imagine them moving the title at this point. I mean, I could be wrong about that, but I just can't see it at this point.
I can't imagine them moving the title. I think what we're going to get is actually a tie. Maybe, you know, a diving attitude adjustment off of something tall, or a Ryback will hit the shell shock off of something tall, and neither man will be able to answer the 10 count. And it'll be like Undertaker and Batista in at Backlash in 2007 in a last man standing match. Neither man answers the 10 count. Tie goes to the champion. John Cena retains. Ryback has a built-in rematch for next month where the Chicago crowd will absolutely murder both of them.
Well, that will be fun to watch, especially if Punk is on the card somewhere.
Yeah. What do you think about Punk? Do you think that they keep him out through that Chicago show?
I don't know. I mean, I can't imagine. You know, he's so obsessed about his craft that I just can't see him being out for any extended period of time. He's probably already, you know, bored out of his mind sitting at home. But, you know, we'll see what happens. I mean, I would like to see him, you know, make an appearance in front of that Chicago crowd, even if it's, you know, his reintroduction, if it's an interference thing or something, anything, you know, to get that crowd ready to blow up. He always seems to incite something in Chicago, so I'd be surprised if we didn't see him in some capacity.
I would just to promote, hey, CM Punk, we haven't seen him for a few months. He's going to be at Payback, and he's going to speak. Like, that simple, easy. Yes, he's going to get the Heroes Welcome in Chicago, but he would get that no matter what. And you can easily say, oh, by the way, you know, you can easily have him cut a heel promo that people just cheer the hell out of, because the next night people are still going to boo him. And just say, hey, this is CM Punk's hometown. This is Bret Hart in Calgary. This is CM Punk in Chicago. And lay it up that way. I still think that Punk could get over as a heel, even getting cheered like crazy in Chicago.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how he comes back. You know, he left on kind of strange terms with the kind of lost his smile type promo, you know, where, you know, nobody was really certain where he was going. So how they reintroduce him should be interesting, you know, to see what his motivation is on his return. So that'll be something to look forward to.
Speaking of losing one smile, do you know what episode of Raw that occurred on?
I do not. Please educate me.
That was on Thursday, Raw Thursday.
Oh, really? There you go.
Yeah.
We tied it all together.
We just brought it around, folks. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so thank you guys for listening to Thursday, Countdown Thursday, on the as part of the ProWrestling.net All Access podcast. Again, head on over to ProWrestling.net and check out our podcast, website, apps, and, of course, please check out the member site if you feel so inclined. Jason and Chris are going to have you covered for Extreme Rules. The members are getting ad-free access to the site, access to the forums, and an exclusive audio review after that show. So please check it out. We do work, good work. So check it out. And thank you, everyone, for listening. Have a great week.